Hey, and welcome to Chicago Beer Pass. I'm Brad Chmielewski.
Brad, what's up, man? I'm Nick White.
And we're on another location.
On location.
This time over at Salamo Still Life.
Logan Square, hello.
Man. Yeah.
This is like ground zero for breweries, I feel like. Logan Square, West Loop, Brewers, what do you call Ravenswood? That thing.
Yeah.
I think those are the real
hubs. Yeah,
the corridors. Yeah. So.
And we got some special guests with us.
Man, we got Mr. John Barley, Mr. Eric Hobbs. Salamo Brewing.
Yeah.
Glad to be here, boys.
10 years.
10 years, right?
That's pretty awesome.
10 long and short years, both.
Yeah, first off, congrats on that. Cheers.
Yeah,
cheers.
Thank you.
Thank you, man.
It's been amazing. I feel like we first, Ken Hunnemeter and I ran into you guys at, Craft Brewers Conference, and then Bug, we did an interview with you there, 10 years ago. It's kind of wild.
Yeah, man. It's been incredible.
Should have brought Hopcast Ken out for the day.
I know, yeah. He's busy baby life, so he's not that caught up.
Cocktails and babies is honey money.
Honey money? Nice. Ken Honey Sugar, dude. I love it.
And then Hobbs, we talked to you, about 2 years ago as, beginning of the pandemic.
Yeah,
and now we're hopefully all past that. Yeah, and so now we don't have to talk about how we're surviving through that.
We did that virtually, didn't I? I forgot about that. That was the last time. That was 2 years ago.
Yeah, it went by quick, man.
Wow. It feels like a lifetime ago.
Yeah, from a 10-year perspective, man, how does it feel, first of all? And then B, how does it feel to be, everyone talks about a second location in the city. Floyd's was talking about doing it, everyone whispers about doing it. And you guys are one of the only crews to really pull it off. So how do those two things feel right out the gate?
Yeah, I mean, the 10 years part of it for sure has been humbling and exciting at the same time. It's kind of weird being considered kind of OG for Chicagoland craft and only being 10. It still feels like we're getting started.
Yeah.
I still feel like a young man, although things tell me otherwise every once in a while. But, we got the same energy. We're still pumped. We're still figuring everything out. We're still getting better every day. So it's exciting for us to celebrate 10 years, take a moment. Especially with the last 2 years, it's felt re-energized in a lot of ways. And I think our plan and what we're trying to share and what we're trying to do this year, we're bringing back a lot of heritage stuff and some of the Belgian stuff. We're pushing forward with a lot of rad IPA projects and some other cool stuff that's on the way. And then, this thing hitting its stride here in Chicago. We're coming up on a year here in a couple months at this location. It's been an awesome opportunity for us to share our story and share our experience in a whole different way. If you've ever been to Naperville and been to the brewery out there, it's a concrete box that happens to have a bar in the corner of it, right?
Yeah.
And here we've got all this beautiful leather, all this wood, all this soft experience, this kind of dive bar, European-inspired Wisconsin Northwoods dive bar is kind of how we thought of it. We've got original paintings above the U-shaped bar from Jordan Gullett, our longtime artist, who had a oil painting up in his basement for 2 years that he worked on.
Yeah.
That kind of tells the story of Salamoth in our own way. But, it's been rad to kind of build our own community down here and build our own culture and share our vision for beer with people. It's been awesome.
Yeah, I came in here a couple weeks ago, and it's just like a fun, outdoor 70s vibe. That's what it feels like.
Like I said, Belgium meets Northwoods, right?
Man, we need a 2-year oil painting to share our story.
Oh, yeah.
Actually sounds pretty rad.
Well, if he has Jordan to start now, you might get it in a couple years.
So we're here this morning, and I think this is the calm before the storm, right? You guys are celebrating today. With the City Water Community Carnival.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
Okay. You guys want to talk a little bit about how that all came together?
So City Water has been our seltzer project we've had since end of 2019. I think when we first decided we were going to move forward with a seltzer project, we'd certainly wanted to do something that felt authentically Salamoth. I think we refer to this as kind of like our inner groove. We developed that and had always kind of anchored it with the story and marketing aspect was a give back program, right? We wanted to connect with our community. We wanted to support local not-for-profits that were involved with the arts and humanity. And we've basically started to do events like this where we bring not-for-profits out and we help them raise money by doing unique experience type things like today's the carnival, right? So each one of the not-for-profits is associated with one of these little carnival activities, which is basically like a Bozo Buckets or a can toss or a bag toss. You know, any money that they earn during there and the prizes that they give away are basically us giving back to them. So we hope to have a couple hundred people come out today and enjoy themselves and win some prizes, but also, you know, raise some money for some good local organizations.
Oh, yeah.
Nice. Yeah, I'm loving the new City Water flavors, like the peach lemonade is great, and really when that pink lemonade hit, the Run the Jewels one, like that was like, oh my god, this is my like favorite thing. Like, I like Valencia orange a lot in the other flavors, but pink lemonade was like, yeah, I need more of this.
I think we put it in our best stuff for beers.
Did you?
We're like, it's not a beer, but this is really good.
We actually have that in the slushy machine today, too, so we're doing pink lemonade slushies.
And now it's in the 12-ounce cans in the mix pack, too.
So we did a two variety packs this year. Seems to be kind of the way most folks like to purchase their seltzers, so we added those. And the originals, which you're referring to, like the VOC and the mixed beer and stuff, which are kind of more LaCroix-like, very light, easy drinking. That's one pack, and then we've got the citrus pack, which is inclusive of the pink lemonade, peach lemonade, key limeade, and then blackberry limeade. Those have a little bit more of a sweeter profile, so they're just a little bit more, I guess, in line with some of the more sweet seltzers. But yeah, it's been a fun project. It certainly challenges us logistically at the brewery and production-wise, because it's a lot to wrangle and to keep moving. But it's been fun. It's been successful.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun having 9 different package varieties. Yeah.
Right.
Let's make all this stuff, throw it in the corner, and then go back and hand pack 12 packs.
With the Still Life location, was there any thought to just make that a City Water spot, or was it always like the hope to have a Salamo tap room in Chicago?
No, I think, you know, through 10 years or 9 when this had opened, you know, it was always a vision to kind of bridge ourselves into the city. It's been talked about by a lot of breweries. You know, we've always done well and had a really strong support system and following down here and strong beer community. And to give, like I mentioned before, a location of ours for ours to curate and have our best experience and best, you know, introduction for some people. You know, you take pride in the fact that we've been around 10 years. That's awesome. But, you know, there's people that lived a block over that have never heard of us until they walked over here, right?
Okay.
So, you know, to have that introduction piece and give our following that we already had a destination within the city and then reintroduce ourselves to more people over and over and over again has been always been the goal.
Okay.
So, you know, City Water is certainly a part of the family, just like Hidden Hand, just like Solemn Oath. And, you know, we want to introduce all those things to everyone. We're confident that people are going to connect with something.
And with introducing people, you like recently out of state distribution, right? Was it Wisconsin?
We have a little bit of out-of-state distro.
Yeah, okay.
That southern end of Wisconsin, Milwaukee, and Madison, a little bit. And then actually Indiana, we actually do a decent amount with Indiana, northwest Indiana, and kind of that northern part of the state. But actually, I mean, with the past 2 years with COVID, we really have just kind of reined it all in and kept our focus on our backyard. And we have a tremendous amount of momentum right now in Chicago across all three projects, Solemn, City Water, and Hidden Hand. So it's cool to feel where we're at right now because this has been a really nice addition to the overarching business plan that we have. But wholesale is still a giant part of what we do and how we operate. So it's cool that we've been able to ship a little out of state, but right now 90% of it stays home.
Okay, that's...
Yeah, we prioritize our backyard first,
right?
Certainly. So.
Okay. And then, so you mentioned Hidden Hands.
Yeah.
What is this project? Is it a different brewer's take on it? Are they separate? Like, how does this work at the brewery?
Jamie, would you start?
So, Hidden Hand for us really spawned from an opportunity for our whole group to kind of reboot and do something new and creative and energetic right out of the gate. JP Vanderveen, who's our director of brewing operations, he's our top beer guy, really was pushing for us to kind of carve out, you know, sub-brand's the wrong word because it's not below anything, but, you know, side brand, side hustle for us to really shape and do something different with. Hidden Hand Brewing kind of spawned from that. We launched in June. Was it June?
May
of 21.
coming up on a 1 year anniversary of that too.
And you know, every 3-4 weeks we're releasing a pair of beers that are coming out. IPA heavy, you know, gives us, you know, we've always thought of it as less about, you know, with Solemn and especially how many brands that we've had over the years, Solemn was always a spot for us to explore. And Hidden Hand was not a exploration point, but an execution point. So whereas we might be trying out new hops, new flavors, and we certainly have sprinkled some of that in on the Hidden Hand side, but it's less less exploration and more execution. We feel like in a lot of ways, particularly on the hazy side, we've, you know, our best versions of those beers are through the Hidden Hand project. And then it's influenced on the Solemnos side. If you've had Small Wave City Club, which is our hazy IPA that just launched in February, and you know, that's our most successful beer launch that we've ever had.
Yeah.
So you know, that's our a single hazy, Citra Mosaic,
yep.
Motueka, and you know, a perfect example of how important the Hidden Hand project is to Solemn as well, from an execution standpoint. Everything we've wanted to drive and fine-tune on Hidden Hand is then influencing and improving the beers on Solemn side as well.
Okay.
That's pretty interesting stuff. Speaking of that, on the Solemn side of things, right, like I'm a big fan of the Lou. I think Brad brings it in a lot to the
that's
show.
That's,
and that's what he's
drinking
right now.
That's what I'm drinking.
I remember in the early days it was the Viking series, you know.
Yeah.
I think what I'm trying to ask is, over the years, consumer tastes change. From a portfolio standpoint, are we done? And I ask people this all the time: are we done with like the flagship and then these seasonals? Or are there things that just kind of stay popular in the portfolio all year long? Or like, what things are people gravitating towards over like a 12-month period in the Solemn portfolio?
Yep. I mean, I'll start it, but I feel like the flagship discussion is something that John should chime into for sure. But like Snaggletooth, for example, like that one has been around as long as I've known John. I mean, I think even my earliest days of going to Solemnmouth, I had had Snaggletooth. And, you know, it's had its ebbs and flows, and it's certainly like battle tested, so it's been around for 10 years. But we're starting to see a resurgence of it now because you're starting to see, you know, that classic West Coast IPA be more what people are looking for in that IPA. And maybe not, it won't ever trump hazy. I still think hazy is king when it comes to the IPA. But it's cool to see people coming back to Snaggle and seeing it again and trying it again. And I think a lot of the rebrand has helped with that because it looks different. People are like, oh, man, I haven't had that in a while. I'm going to try that again.
Yeah.
And it is the closest thing we have to a flagship, right?
Yeah, for sure. And Lou as well, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we were always you know, we've evolved, kind of like what you're saying, from new, can I swear on the air? New shit all the time to kind of settling and honing ourselves. And you know, like even Snaggletooth, for example, everybody remembers Kidnap because we had that kind of out of the gate. But for the first several years, we had 6 months of Kidnap and 6 months of Snaggletooth. And they were never around at the same time. There was kind of that switchover period. That was going to be our, for lack of a better term, flagship IPA approach, was seasonality. And, you know, as we get in the colder months, we get a little more resin, a little more malt focused on the Kidnap side. And then, you know, springtime would hit and we'd have the summer of Snaggle. And, you know, that's, I feel kind of like what you're saying right now. I think we're returning to a little bit of a flagship model. I think a lot of breweries that are growing and maturing in a lot of ways, you realize in some ways you need that, and that's your best foot forward to introduce yourself to new places or new people.
Yeah,
is something that you know is reliable, that we've honed in over years, right?
Yep.
But you know, and just in general, I think there's a spot for diversification, for one-off projects, but even those don't feel as big as they used to be.
Yeah. It's also a challenge logistically. I mean, our wholesaler network, there's been a lot of consolidation. So, like, our wholesaler Windy City Distributing is now part of the larger Reyes Beverage Group owned CBS. So, like, you know, they're juggling hundreds of brands, hundreds of breweries.
Yeah.
And, you know, their focus is better utilized on core. And they're, it's easier for them to execute. It's more manageable. And they're doing actually a really great job with it right now.
Yeah.
And when we turn around one-offs and we do new stuff, it certainly fits all of that, and they're able to manage that well. But if they did it at the pace at which we used to release beers, one or two a week, that's a challenge for them. They don't have the capability of doing that. They don't want to do that. Which is also why, you know, Hidden Hand is nice, because we actually have the opportunity to do more and, like, give ourselves the opportunity to bring beer directly to retail, keep it super fresh, and we get to tap new stuff on a regular basis at both the locations. Because, of course, the tap rooms, you want new stuff all the time. It gives you yeah. something to talk about. It's a draw. It brings people in. So, you know, the flagship model, while I certainly love that it serves a really good purpose for wholesale, you know, it's also the type of thing that we have it designed to be successful the way it is, and we are going to continue to try new things and bring in one-offs, seasonals, for example. You know, that I don't think that'll ever change. Keeps us interested, keeps us excited, keeps yeah. the brewing team stoked to write new recipes and try new things. So, you know, it's a good balance.
And even just to build on that for a second, even at 10 years too, like, you know, we don't have, you know, for Chicagoland, we don't have an anti-hero, we don't have a daisy cutter, we don't have that sole flagship for, we've got, you know, Lou, Snaggle, and now Small Wave, and those three, each one of them is about 20%, you know, they're all kind of lead dogs, for yeah. lack of a better term.
Yeah.
Each one of them is about 20% of our overall portfolio. Yeah. So they're 60%, and then 40% we're doing rotators and stuff that, seasonal and stuff we're excited to try out and yeah. that sort of thing. So, you know,
that's where you want to be. Right?
Yeah, yeah. No, it's you know, and we see seasonal spikes with Lou.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Summertime, we see huge spikes with Lou.
Ramping up 12 packs yeah. right now.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Small Wave, like I said, yeah, big launch, and then, you know, Snaggle's just
steady.
Steady. It's yeah. just continues to grow, just steady and steady growth.
Yeah.
So with the, like, when during COVID you were able to just, like, deliver beer right to people's house, did yeah. that allow you guys to experiment more, or were people, or were you fine doing just the classics and people were like, just here to support you, I don't need the newest thing? Like,
we rebooted a lot of old shit.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
Because we went, I mean, it was wild because, you know, you had what was in tank already when all of it happened, and then you had mm-hmm. to figure out what to do with that. Draft sales went away immediately, right? So wholesalers were like, well, we're not taking kegs.
Yeah, yeah. Overnight.
So, like, overnight. Like, overnight. Quiet, so you just had to start packaging stuff, and, you know, guys like you were ordering, and we were bringing it direct. It was a combo of making sure our cores were around so that we could keep getting it to the grocery stores and the Binnies, who were having record-setting years, too.
Sure.
But also keep it exciting for us to do e-blasts on a weekly basis that says, hey, home delivery folks that are interested, here's this new beer that's coming out. And, I mean, we actually were very successful with home delivery. I was yeah. kind of disappointed when that went away, because I had kind of started to find ways to build that into our plan moving forward.
Yeah.
But
do you think they, like, that's a tough legislation question, but do you think there's a push to, like, have that kind of come back? Because there are people now, like, we're fine going to the store now. All right. Like, home delivery is cool, but it wouldn't make up enough.
I mean, it would be awesome, or to be able to ship or deliver in some way. It would be awesome. You know, each tier's got their own rights in some way, right? Like, retailers still can deliver, still can ship. Manufacturers for the beer side cannot. So, you know, it's I don't know. It's if we gained that, we'd have to give something else.
It's
the trade-off of it.
What's I would have liked more time, because I feel like we were starting to get savvy with how we could have managed
it. It'd still be a thing if it was available.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah, we would have figured it out. But, I mean, end of the day, like, we've got a lot of, we're a very diversified business, right? We have a lot of different things, retail and now self-distro with wholesale, everything. So I still feel like whatever happens down the road, if legislation does change and we're able to do that, we'll be able to step right back into it. But yeah. You know, I can't focus on something that's not real right now, because we've got a million other things to worry about. Yeah,
yeah, our goal was always, and so we did, like, all of Chicagoland over the course of 4 days, I believe, right?
Yeah.
And our goal was always to, and I guarantee we would have figured it out by now, was no matter where you were, you would have ordered, and we'd deliver tomorrow.
The next day.
Every single, you know.
Yeah.
And then from there, it'd be like, you get it in 3 hours type, you know.
Yeah, just get it smaller smaller.
Yep. And then, like, clubs and stuff, we thought about that, too, because there were a lot of regular buyers, and we were like, man, you just need to club program, and then all of a sudden got people that can almost
like the CB, the things that like Beguile and other people have done with like craft or
Exactly. Yep. Yeah, yeah, for fills and all that sort of thing.
Yep. So, yeah, that would have been fun to figure out, but we got other stuff we're working on now. So, yeah.
So that you brought back some of those classics during that time, and now for the 10 years, you're bringing back even more of those. Or
I feel like John's just trying to turn us into a Belgian brewery altogether.
Right. Well, all that together. Was a lot of the
We've had more Belgian beers brewed in the past 6 months. On, yeah, it's, like, it really has. But
I think of Punk Rock for Rich Kids as like a classic, it's on, almost beer.
Yep. It's on draft. It's getting packaged again next week. Butterfly Flash Mob, same thing. We've got a White Van, which is one of our newer Belgian-inspired beers.
Oh, that's an Andrew Mason recipe.
That's a good one. But like, you know, JP Vanderveen, who's been, you know, head of production now for a couple of years, he's an extremely talented brewer. He just put out one of the most amazing Belgian-inspired pails, Brett Lambicus exclusive, Orval-inspired.
Yep.
And you're talking about a guy who drinks more Orval than probably most people you'll ever meet, John. Hands down. And I would say that that beer is exceptional.
Yeah.
That beer is exceptional. Agree. Bottle conditioned. We had it on draft the other night at Bavarian Lodge when we were doing a 10th anniversary party. And it was the first keg to kick. Damn. Out of all the beers we had on tap, all these IPAs, these barrel-aged stouts, things like that, that keg kicked first. People were ordering multiple, and I was like, dude, this is incredible. So it's called Val d'Or, and it will be coming out on Orval Day.
Yep.
Oh, no. Yes, Orval Day.
Yeah, my aunt was just
May 21st.
At Bavarian Lodge, and she's like, I have some of these great barrel-aged bourbon barrel, whatever Bavarian Lodge.
We had the heavy hitters that day. It was awesome.
Yeah, she was like, she was in heaven. She's like, this is great.
yeah.
So, yeah, we threw a party. So for those that don't know, Bavarian Lodge is in Lyle, and it is, you know, the hop leaf of the Western brewers.
Yeah.
It is a destination and certainly an influential piece. For Solemn Oath, when I was just getting started with the project in general, that's obviously going to be a place that I was going to be hanging out a lot. There's a lot of notebooks that I've gone through, just making notes and kind of defining what I was hoping for Solemn Oath and what it would be, sitting at that bar. And you know, Alan's always been a huge supporter of us. They're the spot in Illinois here that poured our beers before our tap room was even open. You know, so they're OG, and for 10 years we threw a party to kind of recapture that and just to have a little bit of nostalgia for turning 10. And
it was cool.
Val d'Or, that pail is exceptional. It'll be coming out next month.
So. It's so good. But it was cool. Like, you know, I'm newish to selling, actually almost 6 years, so I feel like that's relative. But but like, it was cool. Like, I was going to this event. I was one of the first people to arrive right before the bar was going to open, because I'm like, I want to get a seat at the bar. And there was a huge line. Yeah. And it was just to come to this party. And I was like, man, this takes me back to my early days of craft. We used to wait in line for stuff.
Right?
It was awesome. I loved it. And then the vibe in the bar was cool. Because John, you know, as John mentioned, like, having that original spot that was like the first place to pour your pint. I mean, you don't forget those places. When you see your beer out in the wild for the first time, it's, you know, it's such a cool feeling, and to still have that relationship 10 years later and to be able to pack that place, which it'll be busy anyways, right? But we had a line out the door to get in right out of the gate, and it felt really cool, man.
Well, yeah, Nick's he's been on the burbs quite a bit, and we talked about, like, the hunger or the thirst for, like, these new places and these spots out in the suburbs are just, like, I don't know, they're there. Like, we're always talking about Chicago.
Another Lou?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I was talking about Chicago being like
three Lous and an IPA for me.
I don't know, we were always focused on Chicago for so long and being like, oh, that's where the beer is, that's where the food is. But now the suburbs are like, there's a lot of spots. I just got to go drive an hour to go.
There really are.
Maybe that's you getting older. Do you ever think about that?
Maybe
Escape Occupy Chicago. Like,
look at all this space.
Man.
Get
out of here.
It sounds like JP. This is a story, JP. Like, JP doesn't know of any of the towns between Geneva and Chicago. It's like he goes from Geneva to Naperville and then to Chicago. He's like, he's amazed by when you take him somewhere new, like in Glen Ellen, for example, and you take him to beer cellar. He's like, man, I didn't even know this place was here. I'm like, JP, there's cool shit like this everywhere. Like, you go to next town over, there's going to be another one, another bottle shop and a couple of, you know, beer bars. Yeah, dude, I mean, that stuff's everywhere. And, you know, Bavarian Lodge, like Hopleaf or Map Room or whatever, there are certain ones that are just like, iconic.
Staples.
Yep. Just the ones that set the tone. And were early adopters, too, right? They were the first ones doing this. Before it was cool and before it was only just imports and stuff in the early days of craft. So, you know, you do want to at least celebrate those. And when they celebrate you, it feels even cooler, right?
Yeah.
Like anytime you get a handle on it, Poply, if you're just kind of like, oh. Roper approved, hell yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Man, I tell you, man, you guys deserve a lot of credit for, like, these different, I don't call them pivots, maybe iterations, right?
Sure.
Because, you know, IPAs and Belgians and the City Water, and it never gets old. So I think, what, you know, some crews, man, they go for 10 years and they do the same thing.
Sure.
And then some of them close. But I think you guys, it speaks a lot to you guys' ability to change. It's impressive. It's impressive to watch what you guys have done over the last decade.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, we've always taken pride in pivots and you know, not out of need necessarily all the time, but more out of our own interests as well. You know, and then you know, reincorporating.
Come on in, Mike. Thanks, man.
Thanks, brother.
Thanks, guys.
That's what we got to get when we record in my house.
Yeah, dude.
Sure, man.
Hey, Mave.
Shaking cocktails. And stuff. Thank you, sir. Yeah.
Appreciate you.
But, you know, yeah, like, you know, our 10th anniversary beer, which we're bottling on Monday, is, you know, part of even something we strayed from that was always a part of the vision for Sawmouth originally. You know, prior to starting a brewery, I was always heavily influenced and had a love and respect for the brewery. Out of Orange.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, they bottle conditioned everything, and you know, we are starting to get into that with some projects called, you know, Dust Music, which is a mixed culture project that we've got going on. Another side hustle thing. Okay. But even for our anniversary beer, for our 10th anniversary beer, we're doing a Belgian triple and bottle conditioning, and you know, bringing that into the portfolio. And there's some other projects that we've got going that'll be coming out in the next year or so. But, you know, we worked on, you know, with Omega, we worked on a yeast project of hybridizing some yeasts and picking out some strains that we'd be using. And you know, to have that be local is awesome. And to have a bottle condition triple that we're going to have for our anniversary beer as we're making a slew of IPAs that we're super proud of is super cool, too.
Yeah. No, I was going to just expound on that. One of the things I feel like, you know, I learned about John early on working with him is like, you know, we don't really just settle in anywhere. Like once we have something kind of moving, we want to, you know, design systems around it to keep it successful and keep it going in a good direction. But I mean, if you're not bringing ideas or creativity to the table, like you'll stick out at Sawmouth pretty quick. You know, we do have a team of really creative people and they're all doers. Which is the best. I love that. I think the culture at Solemn is the best it's ever been because of that, because of the creativity, because of the ideas that people bring, and it's embraced. Like, you got an idea, you want to do it, let's do it. Look at what we did for the Dome Forest.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that is wild, if you think about it. It's a parking lot in the middle of an industrial park in Naperville. There's nothing less cool than that. And we turned it into this, like, cool dome forest where, like, John, this was John's wild idea. He's like, dude, check out these domes I found. Let's put them in the parking lot.
Yeah.
And then let's, like, make it a forest. And then Jared's like, hell yeah, let's do that. And he's, like, designed all these, like, national park signs. And then we're sitting there at the end. Like, we put all this stuff in.
Yeah.
We built the fence. We did all this stuff.
Something didn't feel
and then we're like, something's missing, dude. We need some mulch. So we put mulch down in the parking lot.
Yeah.
And then it was like, this thing's done.
Well, that
and
was
then,
like 6 p.m. and by 8 a.m. we had
the next, yeah, dude, and it
yards
was like,
and yards of mulch delivered.
It
and
became,
then it was like, now it's ready.
It became like, I mean, we had reservations booked out 30 days in advance pretty much every day for a year, like that first year. It was crazy. And it was because it was one of the only places you could go during COVID that was outdoors. You were isolated with your group. We did an incredible job. Our crew was nuts about
the
cleaning and stuff. Yep, absolutely. Whether or not that any of that really mattered in retrospect, I think, you know, it still gave everybody that chance to go do something. But, like, that's the example of the creativity in the team. They're like, hey, we have this opportunity to do something different and unique. Let's run with it. And then it was like there were so many little pieces of people involved that it was like – we did it all ourselves.
At a time when everything was shut down, we could have 150 people out there, and nobody was within 15 feet of a different party.
And, I mean,
so
our taproom crew, God bless our taproom crew, because they were outdoor service the whole winter. all winter long. That garage door was open
for about a year and a half straight. Yeah. We didn't open indoors until last November.
From a Chicago perspective, was Logan always the goal, or did you guys look at other places?
We looked all over.
It wasn't like we weren't like this was the only area. Uh-huh. We're certainly glad that we landed here. Yeah. This is the right space, you know, the right partners from our landlords all the way to the community, and you know, even down the strip here at Armitage, like. Everybody has been super welcoming, super rad. This carnival is an example of that. Yeah, absolutely. But no, we looked at other spaces. You know, there's still time for us to add one maybe at some point as well. But, you know, we came down to here and what was it, Devon?
We're up, yeah, there's a cool project. They're cool building up right by Uncommon Ground.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's where we are up in Rogers Park. It's
It's
right for the taking up there.
Yeah.
Everything from Devon up to fucking Evanston is pretty much wide open. Yeah.
This crazy guy wanted to do both.
We were deciding on one or the other.
It's like,
it was
dude,
like,
pick one,
fuck
man.
It. Like,
people would go. People would definitely go.
Dude, this guy. Let's do both.
So what's happening out at Naperville now? Have you guys taken over the entire space out there, the entire building? And
we've got about 75% of our building right now.
Mm-hmm. A couple more years and we'll get there.
Yeah, we evolved the Dome Forest. Still lives, but it's evolved a little bit, less domey and more. We've got these open air A-frames, which have been an awesome addition.
Yeah,
you know, just these giant A-frame structures that our sales director built.
Yeah, with his dad.
But you know, outdoor fireplace. It just continues. You know, it's been awesome. We've got our first fooder coming in on Monday.
Oh. Man.
So we've got some other projects that we've got coming on the lager side that were, you know,
yeah, it'd be lager.
10 years in the making and something we've always dreamed about.
Yeah.
That sounds pretty, I don't know, that sounds
John's trying to get it all done in year 10. Yeah. Like, he's just got so much shit happening right now, but year 10 is going to be a milestone where we get a lot of that stuff pretty much flushed out. We're maxed out on capacity right now, so we're trying to balance, like, the idea of, like, this fooder project with, hey, man, maybe we should get some stainless, too. But you know, COVID, we're gun shy. Like, we want to see the real need for like an extended period of time before we make any moves. You know, and that's true with, you know, whether you're hiring staff or whether you're bringing in tanks or you're making an upgrade to equipment or anything like that. So, you know, it's cool that we're getting this fooder, but I'm also like, all right, well, can we get some 60s too? That'd be rad.
But now you're like past that, and now it's hard to get that stuff. So
well, that's the thing. Like, he's like, you know, he's been. He's good about whenever the crew brings up an idea of, hey, we want to look at this, like, all right, we'll demonstrate its worth and its value and what we're gonna get out of it. You know, he'll immediately start doing the research and start giving you options. The one thing is, if you buy new stainless, you're gonna wait 6 months to get it.
Yeah.
So you gotta find it used if you can. So that's the tricky part right now. It's like, even if we want to put tanks in, if we go the new route, it's gonna be 6 months before they're even here. So you gotta start really thinking in advance to get that stuff teed up.
Now we're talking about 23.
Yeah, so now we're just talking about 23 budgets and plans. So, yeah.
I'm guessing like a 15 barrel, 30 barrel system out there? I don't know.
30.
Yeah, 30 barrel system.
Okay.
So we'd be adding 60 barrel tanks. But then you gotta think, you know, the pack side's getting pretty tight because we wanna add one more bright. It's just, yeah. I mean, I would love to take over the whole building, but like a couple years from now.
Okay.
I think that's probably more realistic anyways. So he'll probably want to open another tap room before then anyways,
before
too.
That.
So
do it.
Expand that, yeah.
Do it. Yeah. Anything that we can ride our bikes to in every section of the town, do it.
Did you ride
your bike here today?
Not today, but I've ridden here before. Okay. My very first time here, I rode from Humble.
Oh, yeah.
So, and then,
I was going to ride it, and I was like, I just didn't want to be like...
Because Rogers Park would be
sweaty.
But, you know, I do that on weekends, though.
Do you?
Yeah.
Right on.
Humble to Rogers Park, man, that's about eight miles. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. I mean, we drink all day. I got to do something. You
know? Wait. If you drink, you're supposed to exercise?
Shit. Or not eat and just pass out.
Or cut back on.
Right, yeah. Calories just down. Right, yeah.
Amen.
Ah, man. I don't know. There's so much happening. I don't know where to. Anything
else?
Yeah,
I don't know. I think I'm just. The whole 10-year thing came crashing down on me as we were pulling up, and then the City Water Festival today, and I'm like, fuck, man, these guys have a lot of moves. And I'm like, it makes sense that they've been around for 10 years. And because they're constantly making these things, like things, impactful things that change. Everybody, yeah. I've seen seltzers come and go in other places.
Yeah.
You know, but they really kind of playing with their flag there. And I think it speaks to what they're, who they are, you know?
Yeah, I mean, City Water has been incredible success for it, story for us.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's
best-selling craft seltzer in Chicago.
Yeah.
Well, and it's a different, I feel like it's a different seltzer. Like, there are, I don't know, there's times for City Water, there's times for maybe you want something different. Like, it has a different.
I mean, I don't think so, but yeah, I get what you're saying.
Yeah, I don't. But
you know, it even out of the gate, you know, and we, because, you know, we saw that revolution happening, and thought we could bring our element to it from the give back program, because you know, that's always been a part of that brand's ethos. But like, you know, even the liquid itself, like, I mean, you've got these sweet artificial inspired, I don't want to name the brands themselves, but the top two, and ours is not like that. The foundation of City Water was really more dry, more LaCroix like, more
all natural
on that element of it. And then we've come back into the middle a little bit with the citrus pack, which has been the rocket ship for us, with the lemonade. You know, we had the opportunity to work with Run the Jewels on that project. And,
best tag team ever.
Yeah, absolutely.
Got to give Jared Saul credit for that one, because that was all his idea.
Oh, yeah. He ran Emporium at one point. I think I saw him earlier. Yeah,
yeah, he joined us in 20, middle 20.
Actually, Emporium's turning 10 this year, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we're going to be brewing a beer with them and celebrate their 10th anniversary as well.
It's been 10 years there?
Wow. I know, right? Like, dude, y'all are old. We're all old.
He's not wrong.
We are old.
He is not wrong.
Man.
Yeah.
I know. To think, like, we think back sometimes, it's like, I was in Haymarket when it was just rubble, and they got it. It's like, what?
Yeah.
And, like,
yeah.
Metro, and they were just like, here's a couple tanks, and we're freezing because we, like, it's wintertime.
Yeah. we put up a tent in our brewery so that we could have heat inside of it. Tracy and Doug, OG grinders, man. Like, yeah. It's good to see them doing as well as they are, too, because their spot's killer. I don't know if there's a better taproom in Chicago than Metropolitan.
With their patio. Like
right on the river? Come on.
So great.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So, yeah, man.
Congrats on 10 years. This is awesome. And I'm glad we were able to sync up in person.
Yeah.
This is great. We've been like on a slew of interviews lately. This is cool.
We're back at it. It's good to be doing these types of things again.
Yeah.
I was fine with the virtual, but this is better. I like being as close to me. sitting tight here.
That's right. So anything coming up besides the carnival or anything else in the future of Craft Beer Week is coming
ODX,
up?
ODX, man.
Yeah, Oath Day 10, which we've taken a pause on for the last 2 years. Oath Day 10 will be June 11th in Naperville. We're going to be celebrating a couple weeks later here, our first anniversary. So, you know, we've got a whole slew of things planned. We're working on a project with Pipeworks for, both of us are 2012, so we're working on a project with Pipeworks for a late year party. And, it feels like we've got, like you said, 25 or 30 projects in 8 weeks, 8 weeks to complete them. So it's been going really well.
Never slow down, never grow old, man.
That's right.
So check out all the website and socials for all the event things.
100%.
That's happened there.
Yep.
Really cool.
Yeah, man.
John, Eric, thanks for having us. This is cool, man.
Yeah,
appreciate
you
guys coming out today. Thank you so much.
Thanks for watching.
Cheers, guys. Cheers. To the next 10, right?
Oh, yeah.
Boom.